It looks like we are going on to item number 16, which is the quarterly update on the implementation and recommendations related to the reform of the request for proposals and racial equity in the contracting process.
Thank you, Jody. And is Mr. Busing here? Good morning.
Yes, good morning to everyone. You've had a lot to consider today, so I'll try to keep this brief or succinct at any rate. And you have a few more things apparently coming up. So periodically, I think quarterly, we provide updates on our successes at advancing race and health equity within BHS. And today, more specifically, this report is going to deal with measures that we have taken to establish some baseline data to tell us how well we're doing and where there's, you know, where we've moved the needle and where there's still room for some improvement. So I am going to try to share my screen, unless you all have the report before in front of you. We're good? Okay. So.
Yes, I have it.
Okay. So I'm going to take a look at my notes here, and we'll move through the report. So the challenges that we've faced in the contracting processes frequently have involved smaller or minority-owned or minority-led agencies. So that's where we're focusing our contracting efforts. Frequently, the two go hand in hand. Frequently, the smaller agencies are also minority-led or minority-owned. And in particular, we want to look at the processes that we encounter when we issue RFPs or other competitive sourcing events. So with that said, you're probably all familiar with the action that the Milwaukee County Board of Supervisors took back in 2019 by passing Chapter 108 of the Milwaukee County Ordinances on achieving racial and health equity. And so BHS continues to support and be in alignment with that effort, and also to continue to focus on the social determinants of health as well as race and health equity internally within BHS and externally among our community partners. It probably doesn't come as any surprise to most of us here today that Milwaukee County ranks low in comparison to other counties within Wisconsin. It's ranked 70 out of 72 in a composite of major health outcomes and in various categories and various health diagnoses and other determinants of health across the board. Stakeholders have in particular identified racism and a variety of disparities in looking at health outcomes and institutional and systemic barriers within the system and within our institution in particular. With that said, contracting is one area where we can have some major impact and affect some significant and major changes within health outcomes among our communities. To that end, we about 2 years ago now, contracted with an organization called Cairo Communication. They did an analysis of our contracting processes, and in particular, trying to identify barriers that stood in the way of achieving more equity within our contracting practices in attracting providers of with more diversity, both in the leadership and in the composition of their staff. And also, the report came out with a number of suggestions for improving our contracting processes and tactics that we could employ. such as capacity building, providing technical assistance, improving our outreach and advertising efforts, and overall looking at our contracting process through a racial equity lens. The flow chart in the report examines the relationship between institutional practices, which are both systemic and institutional, living conditions, which are generally the social determinants of health, and then the power to make change and affect health outcomes. We talked a little bit about the Cairo Communications Report and implemented in 2021, in the summer of 2021 when the report came out. We implemented the majority of the recommendations actually in that report. And so we were quick to move on it. We've increased our outreach efforts. We've increased our technical assistance efforts. We've attempted to reduce the red tape, and we continue to work in that area. We've increased our outreach efforts, both in the media outlets that we use and in also in the public information sessions that we hold by about 50%. And we've also doubled the time that we leave our RFP solicitations open to proposals. By doing that, we have more time to interact with the agencies. We have more time to meet with them. We have more time to take their questions, respond to their questions. And then they have more time to do their research on their end. And all of these things contribute to better written proposals, which ultimately contribute to success in contracting with more minority-led and minority-owned organizations. The first table in the report, very small table, is called BHS payments, and that is looking at total contracted payments versus total contract payments to minority-owned or minority-led organizations. We made BHS made a little over $142 million in payments to its contracted community agencies, either under purchase of service or fee for service contracts. Of that, over $47 million was paid to minority owned or minority led organizations, which is about 33.5%. Just as a comparison or a benchmark against the county benchmark overall, our department has a contracting goal to contract with 17% of our contracts are supposed to be with minority-owned organizations. And that's pretty much the goal across the county as a whole. So dollar-wise, we're contracting with roughly double that. And of that, I'm going to move on to the next chart right below that. We look at agency leadership, administrative leadership, board of directors, and other major leaders within the organization. That table shows us that out of the respondents, and I think we had about 170 agencies that responded to our survey. Now, these are just DHS agencies. If you add the agencies for the rest of the department, that would add about another 100 agencies on top of that. So of the 2,400 leaders within those agencies identified, 877 of those leaders of our minority populations, or 36% of all leadership. That tracks pretty closely with the agency staff overall, employment of agency staff overall, which is about 38% of agency staff. Of that staff, 27% are African American, 5% are Asian, 2%, I'm sorry, 5% are Hispanic, 2% are Asian, and then the rest of the minority staff makes up about another 2%. That is leadership of the staff. There is another table that, instead of looking at payments, looks at the number of agencies which are minority owned or led. And as I've discussed in the table that says 2021 data, minority owned or led, 77 agencies, non-minority owned or led, 93 out of a total of 170. So that is about 45% of the agencies we contract with, as opposed to 33.5% of the dollars that we actually expend on with our community partners. How does that compare to 2020? It actually shows about a 5% increase in the number of minority-owned or minority-led agencies in 2021. That number was 40% in 2020 it is 40%. In 2021, it was 45%. And then agency employees, I'll let you look at that information, at your convenience. But the agency employees tracks very closely with the agency leadership in terms of the actual frontline staff that is serving our Milwaukee County and BHS clients and program participants is about 38% people of African American and other people of color. So that is the report. There are a couple of there is some context in which to consider the report. We don't distinguish in our agencies between purchase of service and fee-for-service contractors. And even if we did, I'm not sure that it would be of much help to us. There tends to be sometimes a blurring between the two. The major difference is that our opportunity through the RFP process is primarily in purchase of service contracts. Those are the majority of our contracts that are RFP'd. That doesn't mean that we do not RFP any of the contracts within our fee-for-service networks. We do, but we only do that when we limit the number of providers for a particular program. An example of that would be CSP or targeted case management. We may only have a need for 7 or 8 providers, and in those cases we do issue a competitive sourcing solicitation. But other than that, the networks are pretty much open to anyone who wants to apply. We do that once a year. This year we changed our practice and we left both the wraparound network and the CARS adult network open for 2 months as opposed to 1 month. We held, again, two informational and Q&A sessions, and we are hopeful, as we are currently in the process of evaluating those applications, that's going to reflect similar results that we saw in our RFP process by increasing the percentage of agencies that are minority-owned or minority-led. So with that, I'll open the floor to questions.
Kathy.
Dennis, I have a question. If you read this last paragraph before the summary, the way that healthcare in general is going is to much more large companies. So you see this, people buying other systems and all that, and thinking that is the best way to deliver care. This takes the exact opposite approach that essentially says small is good. But I don't know that there's any data to support that. I mean, clearly there's costs associated with a lot of small agencies that you don't have if you have several large agencies. And so that's okay if the outcomes are really different. But I don't know how we'd know that the outcomes were really different.
Well, we do have contracting performance measures, which Dr. Drumulski heads up and has been heading up now for the last 5 or 6 years, probably. So we do have the outcome data. Our efforts, to be quite frank, have been driven more by consumer input and community input and consumer preferences. So consumers are telling us that they prefer to have their health care and mental health services located closer to their home, closer to the neighborhoods they live in. And so location of our providers is a major factor. They tell us that they prefer to have healthcare practitioners and providers that look more like them, whether it be African American or Hispanic. And they tend to tell us in the community at large that minority-led and minority-owned organizations are frequently more responsive to BIPOC health concerns, barriers to health outcomes, and that responsiveness to those concerns results in better health outcomes. So we've had a lot of success. We've placed BHS staff now in 4 federally qualified community health centers. We've opened our networks up, and we've stressed the importance of location and zip codes of the providers that we're bringing into our networks and other access issues. So you raise a good point about, you know, what the data supports, and this report doesn't contain that data, but
Dennis, I don't disagree. I mean, I would rather go to a doctor who lives close to my home. I would rather go to a therapist who looked like me. That doesn't mean a large agency can't do that. That's my point.
It doesn't mean a large agency can't do that. There is some evidence that minority-led agencies are more sensitive and more responsive to racial equity concerns and concerns regarding things like institutional racism. And, of course, institutional racism then leads to barriers that either prevent or discourage our participants from receiving the health care that they need. So we want to encourage more people to receive health care, and the way you do that is by locating in their neighborhoods and by allowing them the choice to choose providers that are more trusted and make them feel more comfortable in the care that they're receiving. Beyond that, I think it would be an interesting study. Certainly, the data is showing that we are serving more and more participants every year. And so if we can serve more participants by encouraging individuals to receive health care, seek attention when they need those services, that's a success right there. So you won't necessarily see a difference in health outcomes if we're increasing the number of participants served, but I think you will see a improvement in health outcomes among those minority and BIPOC populations. And I know that Dr. Drumulski does track that data.
Right. So, thank you.
Yes.
Good question. I saw Dr. Schneider's hand up earlier, and then followed by Matt.
Kathy, 2 points. one specific to outcomes in large health systems versus small providers. There is data related to tertiary, high cost, low volume procedures being done in centers of excellence. The rest of care, you're right, there isn't a whole lot of evidence. The second body of evidence is clear that the large aggregation of health into limited providers actually holds costs or drives them up. The belief that aggregation of healthcare actually will drive costs down has not been proven.
Right. And so when you watch these systems do this, it's not explainable, but...
It gives them leveraging power to set contracts with large insurance.
Right.
That's what they're after. Sure. It isn't necessarily they don't create the individual benefit for a particular person necessarily. And I'd say they haven't really, while they've adopted either Plaintree or other patient-centered paradigms, they haven't really done it in a equity sort of way, consistently across the board as a generalization. There's probably a health system or two out there that does, but not in a general way.
Thank you. Matt?
I just want to say that I agree with everything that Mr. Busing and Dr. Schneider have already said. I think the only thing I'd like to add is that I don't think these policy changes are necessarily aimed at smaller is better. It's more about, bigger isn't always best. And we have a lot of rules and complexity around our procurement process that are there for good reason, but the unintended consequence of those rules and complexity has been to disadvantage small providers that maybe don't have a full-time grant writer or RFP team, and advantage larger providers who can put more effort and energy into those proposals. So we're just trying to level the playing field to make sure that we're not disadvantaging those smaller providers that often do have niche specialties that we really want in our network and value in our network. And in our community, often those smaller providers are disproportionately minority owned in comparison to the larger providers. So I think we value all of our providers, but just want to make sure that we're acknowledging the smaller ones and able to help them through the process better.
Yeah, thank you for that, Matt. Yeah, especially the unintended consequences and sometimes covert practices that have consequences, again, that have negative impact on the health outcomes. So thank you.
Thank you. Tom?
Yeah, I'm sensitive to this and support this whole initiative. What I'm also sensitive to is I haven't heard the argument here so much, but certainly on the national level, that quality standards are inherently exclusionary. And we have to stay away from that. And this isn't about relaxing quality standards. We have to maintain those standards and help people achieve them and rise to those standards. They can't be viewed as inherently exclusionary. So I also want to be sensitive to that, too.
Yes, thank you for that. And right, monitoring and quality, continuous quality improvement and quality monitoring is, of course, another piece of the contracting process.
And it doesn't mean we don't go out of our way. We do go out of our way to make sure they're understood, that they, can be followed and so on, and aren't as big a burden as they might otherwise be. But they shouldn't be viewed as inherently exclusionary.
Exactly.
Thank you. Ken?
Yeah, I really tried to reframe myself. But at the same, even that comment of, so would a smaller or agency, it's almost as saying that they would not produce the quality of work. And so, I don't even see why that was a question or even a thought when it came to quality. And so, again, that is some of the systematic things that we talk about today, right? It's like, I mean, I don't think we're going to even the question of compromising the quality of work by targeting smaller or minority agencies to provide services. And I just wanted to add that.
Yeah, thank you for that, Ken. Where we find the challenge is with smaller organizations is access to capital, access to technical support, back office support, and administrative support. So challenges in grant writing and grant application writing. Sometimes back office support, sometimes there's challenges in things like documentation. They may be receiving the training, but is the training documented? So those are the types of challenges for smaller organizations. That doesn't mean that the quality isn't there. Sometimes the documentation isn't there. Sometimes the compliance isn't there. But, thank you for that observation and comment.
Thank you, Ken. Good. Any other comments? This is good discussion. Questions for Dennis? Well, thank you very, very much, Dennis. We always appreciate these quarterly updates, and we'll reach out to you if there's anything else we want to ask.
Certainly. Yeah, you're more than welcome. Thank you.